The next sefer is Shoftim. Shoftim deals with the period from Yeshua until the last of the two Shoftim. It does not include Eli, and it does not include Shmuel. This is a period of time that has the transition from the period of the desert till the period of becoming a nation. When Bnei Yisrael leave Egypt, they're avadim, they're slaves. They don't have a concept of a nation. They stay in the desert for 40 years. When they come into Eretz Yisrael, the book of Yeshua is a book that takes place for how long? How long does the book of Yeshua take place?
14.
What?
14.
It's 14 to 17 years. There's 7 years of conquering, 7 years of dividing, and Yeshua lives for a little bit longer afterwards. After the transition period of Yeshua, the Bnei Yisrael have to now become a nation in Israel. And that requires a transition. And this book of Shoftim deals with the transition. The book has two expressions, or three expressions of interest. One is Ka Yashar Beinav Asa. Ish Ka Yashar Beinav Asa. Everything that a person thought was good, he would do. There was not a lot of central authority. The shofet is a form of government that is different than a melech. He does not have the same authority. He has some of the same authority, but he does not have all of the same authority. And the country was at best a federation. That is, each of the 12 tribes functions as their own government by and large. And some of one of the last stories in the book of Shoftim describes the destruction, the decimation of the tribe of Benjamin. Benjamin, from a tribe of about 40,000 people in the desert, is reduced to 500. And this then describes that process of how the nation flows into becoming a unified nation, and how it works in that transition. In the Midbar, we had the Meraglim, we had the spies, the 12 spies that Moshe sent. They came back with a bad report about Israel. The reason they came back with a bad report is because they were afraid of this transition period. And this transition period is difficult. The concept of everybody doing that which was right, which they thought was right, not what a ruler or the Sanhedrin are, which was halachically correct, is important to understand the period. The second thing that is important to understand the period is at the beginning of many of the chapters of the end, it says, and they continued to do that which was wicked in Bnei Hashem. Vayasu hara Bnei Hashem, vayasifu asot et hara Bnei Hashem, and they continue to do the ra. But it doesn't say what the ra is. It doesn't say what their chait was. The Mefarshim go through a great deal of difficulty to define what kind of chait it was. And none of them really answer. But any time the Navi or the Chumash is not explicit, that lack of being explicit is something that is crucial to understand. It teaches us something. And the question is, what was the nature of their chate? What did the people do wrong continually, over again, in different ways, during this period? Avodah Zarah? Probably not. There are times that they did Avodah Zarah. But it does not appear that that was the crucial phenomenon. There were times that there was Avodah Zarah, and there were times that some people did Avodah Zarah. But in terms of the period, it appears that the form of Avodah Zarah was not a direct kind of Avodah Zarah. We do have Avodah Zarah that occurs. One of the last stories is in the Shoftim, which summarizes some things, is the Pesel of Micha. There was an idol that was built by actually somebody, but the priest was the grandson of Moshe. And they have this idol through a long period of time. But it appears that, according to most Mephoshim, that they did not actually do a chait that they would be responsible for in terms of something that was punishable, like Avodah Zarah. And if it doesn't say what their chait is, there's a reason for that. So there's a variety of explanations. When you learn Navi, if you take one track, sometimes it's useful to understand the entire trend. You could take a different track in terms of understanding what the cause is or what the structure is. I think that the nature of their chait was that they lost track of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. They lost track of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who defends them and protects them. They thought that it was Kochov Atzum Yadi, it was my strength and the strength of my hand and force. That was what they believed, the strength of their being in Israel is. And that theme is a theme that is effective now too. It's a theme that says today when we're in Israel or when we're in America or wherever we are, if we have a good job, we tend to say what? Because I got a good job, because I went to a good school, because I did this. And we lose track of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. If in Israel we win a war, or we catch a bomber, we tend to say, what great intelligence we've had that we're able to catch somebody. And that is true. But it's also true that it's because of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And if you look at the time frame, one of the things that it says at the end is Arba'im Shana, 40 years or 20 years, or a period of time that takes people to forget what happened in the previous generation. If I would ask you who the President of the United States was 20 years ago, many of you would not be able to answer the question. What?
Wasn't Bush in the 90s?
It could be. But the memory for 20 years ago is decreased. Okay? Reagan was substantially before. It was towards the end of the Bush period. If I would ask you if I would talk about Israel, and I would ask you, out that window, you see part of what they call, or what many newspapers call, the occupied territories. How long has that been under Israeli control? How long was it under Jordanian control? How many could tell me? The period of time that one forgets facts and one forgets God is not that long. And that is part of the essential theme of the Shofti. The other theme is that the third component is there's a gradual decline and at the same time strengthening of the relationship of B'nai Yisrael to Torah and mitzvahs. And the decline goes in many, many different ways. But at the beginning we'll see that the Shoftim are on a higher level than some of the later Shoftim. The miracle, the way they are saved is more miraculous than at the way that they're saved in later Shoftim. So we have that kind of trend also. During the period of Shoftim, let me pass this out. These are the Shoftim and the times, approximate times in which they ruled. These are the people that are discussed in the book. It does not include Shmuel, who is the last of the Shoftim. During this period, there are three mitzvahs that are held in abeyance. When the B'nai Yisrael come in to Eretz Yisrael, in the Midbar, in the desert, what mitzvahs do B'nai Yisrael have to keep?
Shemitah.
They keep Shemitah in the Midbar?
Shabbos.
They keep what parts of Shabbos? All Shabbos? What is the general rule that of the mitzvahs that they have to keep? And the rule is certainly not is not a very sound precise rule. They have to keep the lo sases. They have to keep the negative commandments. They do not have to keep the positive commandments, which means that if a positive commandment is coupled with a negative commandment, that they then need to do it, so that they would have to do Shabbos. But they don't have to keep a variety of halachas. For example, the holidays were not applicable in the desert. None of these laws of the holidays. There are a variety of other laws that state in the Chumash, Ki Savol El Haaretz, when you come to the land. There are specific laws that applied when they come into the land, then they take effect. And when they came in during the period of Yeshua, the laws took effect. Now there's some arguments of whether it was after the immediately after the first 7 years, after the first 14 years. And there are some differences in the mitzvahs atuya ba'aretz, the mitzvahs that are dependent upon the land, the mitzvahs of Meiser and Trumos and Shemitah and Shmiz. These mitzvahs have different starting times. But then when they came in, all of the mitzvahs applied except for three. That were held in abeyance. And these three mitzvahs become important in understanding the process of when they become a nation, the process of the first king. These mitzvahs are, does anybody have a guess? Appointing a king. There's a mitzvah to appoint a king. There's a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. And there's a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. There's a mitzvah to build a permanent place. During this period, they used the Mishkan. It was set up. We'll see, it was eventually, not very relatively quickly, set up in Shiloh. And it was set up in a quasi-permanent fashion, but it was not the permanent place. It was not Yerushalayim. And these things are held in abeyance, and the reasons for those are technical in their nature. Yeshua, it says here 28, not 14 and not 17, it says that he ruled for 28 years. After that, you have a shofet, and of these shoftim, there are a shofet from each of the 12 tribes, if you count Yeshua, from each of the 12 tribes. The shoftim, briefly, the first shofet is somebody by the name of Asniel. He is the nephew of Kalev ben Yefuna. Kalev was whom?
The spy with the positive report.
He was the second spy with the positive report. He became the head of the tribe of Yehuda, and his nephew is the first shofet after Yeshua. We go down through different shoftim. We have somebody, if you look after Itzvan, who is Boaz, who is the great-grandfather of David. Ruth comes to him, and we have the last of the shoftim is Shmuel. The last before him is Eli. We have the different Nevi'im. This period was a period in which the people had a greater amount of Nevuah. And the Nevuah that they had was a closer connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the Nevi'im, we only list Nevi'im that have a Nevuah that goes for generations. If somebody has a Nevuah that was just for the time, then it was not listed. And the nature of Nevuah, in order to understand Nevi'im, is crucial. How does Nevuah work? Why does it work? And what is its purpose? So we have to talk about that. On the other side of this paper that we passed out is a picture of Eretz Yisrael and of the Shvatim in Eretz Yisrael. And it's useful to understand the different battles and the different places that the battles take place. As you can see, this part is largely Yehuda. And in the period of the division, we had the area of Tel Aviv, which was supposed to be to go to Shimon. And that never really happened. Shimon did not conquer and was sort of absorbed into Yehuda. So the southern part of the country is largely the tribe of Yehuda, and many of the fights occur in the northern part of the country. Later on, after the period of Shlomo, we'll see that the country is in fact divided into two parts, and the northern part, which is called the Kingdom of Israel, becomes the place where 10 tribes get lost because they're conquered much later in the end of the Nevi'im, they're conquered by Sennacherib and they are exiled, but these are the tribes that are lost. The tribes that are kept are the southern part. But the story and the process becomes important to understand the trend. The Mishkan is set up in Shiloh, which is in the tribe of Yosef, the tribe of Menashe, Ephraim. Shiloh is... right above Benjamin's name. It's right in the end of Ephraim. It's on the road. You can see where it is. You can go there now, and you can see where the Mishkan was set up and things of that nature. The fighting takes place before. That's sort of the introduction to how and what you're going to be studying in Shoftim. The time takes place about from the year of about 2500 of the creation and goes till about 29, almost 3000. In terms of the world, you have the first 2,000 years, which are... what happens in the first 2,000 years of the world? We view the world as being how old? What? 5,771. There are different questions in what... and there's differences of opinion, but basically that's the generally accepted thing. The first 2,000 years are roughly the period of from Adam until Abraham. The second 2,000 years start the period of the identification of the Jewish people. Abraham is born, establishes, has Yitzchak, the Parshas. They go into Egypt. They're in Egypt for about 210 years. They come out in roughly 450. And you have, they're in the desert. You have the period of Yeshua in a roughly 2500 is when they start settling Israel. Israel has, and during the period of Israel, there are three periods, let us say, roughly called three periods. One is the period of the Shoftim, the period in which we have the Mishkan, and that goes on for about 500 years, 400 and some. But if you add the period of David to it, it's a roughly 500 years. You have the period of the first temple, which goes on from about 3,000 to 3,500. And you have the period of the first temple that goes on from 3,000 to 3,500. You have the period of the second temple, which goes on to 35 to almost 4. Again, those are rough numbers. Each of the temples lasts for about 410 years, 410 or 420, and there's a period in between. So that's the general overview of the book. In the current events, there's a lot of different ways we can look at current events. One of the things that I find looking at current events is to look at current events in light of the Navi. And the current events in the Navi mirror the current events in the newspaper. Or the newspaper mirrors the current events in the Navi. For example, there's an organization of the UN called UNESCO. The deals with cultural heritage, things of that nature. And they had a vote that said the Kever Rachel, the tomb of Rachel in Beit Lechem, and the Merat HaMachpelah, the tomb of the fathers, the forefathers in Hebron, are Muslim holy sites. And it removed any reference to anything that was Jewish. And that's the essence of the Navi. You can view history as a set of political fights and difficulties, and you know they want to make this statement because they're friendly with and they need the oil, and you can view it as an editorial in the Jerusalem Post did, essentially it went through the different things. It was an interesting analysis. It was this week. You can probably find it in the Jerusalem Post if you look at their site, by Carol Glick. She basically said it's because they're anti-Semitic. And that is true. And you can view it as you view the Navi. And that is, after a period of time, when B'nai Yisrael lose track of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a reminder to us. I don't remember who quoted, who came up with this, with the quote that basically says, if the Jews don't, the Jews don't separate themselves, the non-Jews will separate them. But it's a nice quote, I don't remember it. But the principle is, if we don't see God, then God will make sure that the nations or the other people remind us of the fact that we are in a different place. And if you look at all of history, that is a way of reading the newspaper. And I didn't have this teacher, but at my school, there was a teacher that came in after World War II, and he didn't know any English. But he was a Talmud Chacham, and they needed a teacher, and they hired him. And they gave him a class of 12-year-old boys. And the first day, they really made mincemeat of him. And they came home and said, basically, this guy is a goner. And the next day, he came in with a newspaper. And he taught them how to read the newspaper. And that's part of what you need to understand when you look at history, when you look at current events. So that's what we'll do. On Monday, we'll start with the actual Navi. If there's any questions. All right, have a good day.